And welcome back. We've all heard stories of acts of animal courage, most of which center on dogs and cats. But how about heroic hippos, daring dolphins, and savior seals? Well, you can read about these and more in an inspiring and colorful book by Jennifer Holland, author of Unlikely Heroes, 37 Stories of Courage and Heart from the Animal Kingdom. Jennifer is a science journalist and contributing writer for National Geographic. She joins me in studio. Jennifer, it's so nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, I used the word inspiring in the introduction. And then I said to myself, is this the right word? Is inspiring a word you should use for animal courage? What do you think?
I think so. And actually, I sort of looked at the word hero in a broad sense for the book. So it's a lot of stories are, you know, kind of the typical hero saving of a life, doing something courageous. But then I have animals that are maybe used in a conservation program, some therapy animals, like some of the animals you had on your previous show. So I was really looking for animals. They don't know they're being heroic, of course, but animals that are just kind of doing something special that is really helping somebody or another animal.
But, you know, in reading your stories, sometimes I think that they do know they're being heroic. I mean, it's like it's a conscious thing that I'm doing here by saving this child or warning of a fire.
Yeah, it does. With dogs especially, I think, and because dogs tune in to us and we do to them, it does sometimes seem like we can read their thoughts too and that they really are proud of what they're doing. And I think they do. They really like to make us feel good. That's part of their point of being is really just being partners with their humans.
But dogs are really only a relatively small part.
This is true.
Of the menagerie that you put in your book here.
This is true. Yes.
You've got a dog on the cover. What is the most unusual story that you tell, do you think?
Let's see. That's a good question. I think, you know, there's kind of a mix of surprising stories and touching stories. We have a very touching story of a llama that saved a herd of sheep.
I was just going to say, if you can't think of one, that's the one I would point to.
A really wonderful one because, you know, certainly llamas instinctively will herd. So it's not necessarily that behavior that was surprising. But the fact that there was this serious danger and the llama really put itself at risk to make sure that these sheep stayed away from the flames. And the llama lost its life as a result. So it really did do the truly heroic thing.
It was really heartbreaking.
It was.
The flames were closing in on this herd of sheep, and the llama, as you said, just run away.
Yeah.
But the heat was so intense it actually sealed his or her eyes.
His eyes were sealed and burned some of his fur. And actually the fur, the coat kind of protected his skin pretty well from, you know, he could have been burned much worse. But unfortunately, he inhaled a lot of smoke, too.
These stories that you tell come from all over the world. How did you compile them?
Initially, I would look for I scour the internet first of all. It's a great place to start, but of course I've learned as a journalist that you can't trust the information that you read, so you really have to go back and find the sources. So if I found a picture maybe or a little clip from a newspaper, hopefully, you know, even from overseas somewhere, there might be a little mention of an animal that did something remarkable. And then it was a matter of tracking down the sources, the photographers, whoever were involved with what happened and getting kind of the backstory to the photos.
We should point out that you have a number of wonderful photographs in your book, color photographs, of course, that certainly helped to tell you the story.
Yeah, I think the photos really draw people to the books because they are really precious and beautiful animals to begin with.
There are 37 stories that you tell. And you just mentioned one of them, the llama saving the herd, if you will. What is the one that impressed you the most? Or is there something that just when you were writing it said, I can't believe that this thing?
There are a few. I think I'm always really amazed by animals that can, for example, smell diseases or smell something. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, we know that dogs have amazing sense of smell, but there are also rabbits that may seem to be able to smell disease. There are rats that can smell landmines. There's a rabbit in the story that we think maybe smelled a change in a man who was diabetic. Mm-hmm. And he was going into a diabetic coma, and his rabbit that was sitting on his lap started scratching his chest and kind of getting very upset, and his wife realized something was wrong. But then there's an elephant seal in here that protected the zookeeper from a whole batch of other seals that were very aggressive.
This, you know, that's another story that that struck me because it really was the connection between the seal and the keeper.
Right.
before this incident that established some sort of a relationship that this enabled the seal or caused the seal to step in. Why don't you tell that that story?
Sure. So, there was an elephant seal, a young female, and she had been injured, and so she was brought into a marine center. And there was a keeper there who really was her keeper. He took care of her every day, fed her, cleaned, you know, her exhibit. And he says he used to just kind of talk to her, and he had a lot of alone time with the seal. So he felt kind of a bond with her. He wasn't sure how she felt, but he sort of got that feeling.
Just to interrupt for one second, we're not talking about baby seals or small
That's
seals.
Right.
We're talking about some pretty big critters.
Yeah, she was a good-sized elephant seal. And at one point, he was in the exhibit, and he slipped and fell and kind of knocked his head for a minute, was a little dazed. And there were a bunch of other seals in the exhibit that were very aggressive. They were young and kind of looking to tear something up. And he said they were ganging up on him. He saw them coming, and he was going to get attacked by these seals. And here comes his little friend, gets in between him and the aggressive seals and puffs herself up in a defensive posture and protected him. He was able to get up and out of the way rather than get bloodied by these animals.
Not all of your stories deal with the interaction between animals and humans, but a number of them do. What, if anything, and I'm assuming you might have made some connection about the relationship that we have with animals and vice versa.
Sure. I think, you know, it used to be taboo to really talk about animal emotion or compassion, anything that was kind of human-only terms. But now we really are seeing, you know, with the studies of brains and that kind of thing, we're seeing that there's a lot of overlap in these abilities. And I think especially with animals that we have tamed and sort of brought to be our pets, we're going to have a special bond with them. And I think they really can read a lot about our body language and our feelings. There's empathy that a lot of animals are capable of. And certainly for humans, it's very healthy to have animals in your life. It's, you know, they say it lowers your blood pressure. It's just a calming, when they're behaving, at least, it can be a calming feature in your life. So I think there's a really special relationship that goes both ways.
That what you've just mentioned is part of what the therapy dog thing is all about, because it does calm things down for people who are having emotional issues. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most touching things that I've seen in, I guess it's been a year or two now, there was a video showing elephants mourning, just in line with what you're talking about here, that they went and looked as if they were weeping at the site where one of their herd had died.
Yeah. In the talk that I give to students, I have a photograph of those elephants, and they're caressing the bones of the elephant that had died.
That's exactly.
And they go back to the same place. It's like it's a grave or visiting a grave. And it's so human. You know, it's so hard not to see that as mourning.
So what does that tell us? What does that teach us?
Again, I think giving animals credit for being a little more sophisticated than we used to think. Certainly, intelligent mammals like elephants, they need to be treated with great respect, because I think we have to think of them as being much more like us when we think about treating them.
I'd like to open the lines to our listeners. If anyone out there has a heroic animal story they'd like to tell on the air, Jennifer Holland is the one to tell it to. Who knows? Maybe there's even a sequel out there someplace.
There could be.
382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you prefer to send us a tweet, we'll take that as well at STL on air. Now back to Jennifer Holland. You mentioned the visits you have with school children. I know you're going across the country to do that these days. What's in it for them? I mean, what are you finding their reaction to be, and are they learning the kinds of things that you've just been talking about?
I think so. First of all, I haven't met a kid yet who doesn't love animals or say that they do. The first thing I ask them is, who has pets, who loves animals? And they all raise their hands, and they're so excited just to look at the photographs. I could probably not say a word and just run pictures. But they very much believe in this idea of emotion in animals. I think they're more sensitive to that than a lot of us are. And so I think it's really neat for them to hear that, you know, the scientists are starting to agree with you, kids. You know, there is a lot more going on here. And I do try to talk a little about the limbic system, you know, where the center of emotions lie in the brain, and that we're seeing, you know, you see the same structures in the brains of other mammals. Mm-hmm. And that, again, gives us a clue that they're capable of having feelings that we have. And I also try to be realistic and say they may not experience it exactly the same way that we do, but there certainly is overlap there. And In the first two books I did, which were about kind of unlikely animal relationships, it gives a great message of being friendly to those who are unlike yourself. And I try to get that message across as well.
What drew you to this whole subject of the animal world? I know you're a science reporter, but you must have been an animal person from early on,
yes,
I would guess.
Yes, from the womb, I think. My mother was a big animal lover, and so we always had them around, and it was just a big part of my family and my life. And I loved writing, so it just made sense to try to combine the two things. Mm. So National Geographic was a wonderful place to do that, and then the books just kind of came from researching for magazine articles.
We're starting to get some calls. I'd like to bring the audience into this. We'll start with Carol, who's calling from Ellisville. Carol, thank you for being with us. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
We had a dog that we got. Well, she was a rescue dog. We got her from a shelter, and she was always very terrified of fire. If our neighbors had a fire in their fire pit out in the backyard, she didn't want to go out there. We couldn't have a fire in the fireplace. She would go and hide. And there was one night where she kept poking me in the middle of the night and clearly trying to wake me up, which is very unusual for her. And she just kept poking me, and then she started kind of barking. And so I finally got up out of bed thinking, well, maybe she had to go out. Went out into the hallway. She started going into the kids' rooms and kind of spinning around in circles and barking. And when I got downstairs, I realized that there was a smoke detector whose battery was going bad and had been chirping. Mm-hmm. And she clearly heard the chirping and was trying to get us out of the house.
That's incredible. It's amazing how, you know, they seem to know when something is wrong. I don't know that they always know what it is, but they definitely are very good about alerting us when something is different.
And fire comes into play in so many cases. The stories we hear of animal heroics, very mm-hmm. often a fire is associated with that.
That's right, yeah.
Carol, thank you for the call. We have another call from University City, I think, along these lines perhaps. Kaima, is that Karima? I'm not sure I have your name right.
Yes, this is Karima.
Karima, go ahead, please.
So I just wanted to tell a quick story about my heroic dog. When I was in third grade, I had a German Shepherd named Bebop, and on Christmas Eve, our house, unfortunately, caught on fire and, you know, instantly it burned down. Bebop had recently had puppies, so we had, it was Christmas, and we had the dog and the puppies, and all of the humans were able to get out, but Bebop went into the house and saved each of her puppies. She took each puppy by the scruff and literally pulled each one of the dogs out of the house. Unfortunately, Bebop and the last puppy did not make it. Oh. But that was when I was a child, and I always just think about how, you know, incredibly empathetic and heroic of it, how heroic she was to go and save all of the puppies. And then I also just had one other comment about sometimes, do you ever notice that you have empathy for animals? So I know that they have empathy for us, but any of you guys ever noticed that you can, feel an animal's emotion?
I think so. Certainly with any animal that you kind of get to know, whether it's your pets or, you know, a therapy animal or something, I think that we can read them almost as well as they can read us. We may be guessing sometimes what they're thinking. We may not get it quite right. But I think that it definitely goes both ways. I absolutely feel that way with my animals.
And if you've got pets, if you have pets, you get to know them a little bit and you can see how they react to different things. But I see it in the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes really tell an awful lot of the animal story.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right. Let's take another call. Susan wants some equal time here. She's calling from Illinois. Go ahead, Susan. You're on the air.
Right. In this wonderful panorama, we got to speak up for cats.
I agree.
I have a wonderful cat. I got him when he was 4 months old, and, you know, he just grew up. We grew up, he grew up with me, and we have many surprising ways, really, of communicating. And he comes towards me, especially when I sit on a sofa or talk on the phone. He just comes over.
When Susan, when he wants to. I mean, that's the way cats are.
Well, that to me is a stereotype, an unfair stereotype. It's true that he doesn't always respond directly to things, but there are things he does respond directly to.
Like
looking out the door and eating.
Absolutely.
I think that's an unfair stereotype. He's a perceptive being, a little being.
I think they know a lot. And I should say there are a number of cat stories in Unlikely Heroes. It's the dogs sort of stand out, but there are some wonderful cat stories as well.
And Susan, I have to tell you, I've had cats, and I find them to be, at times, very independent, loving, but they'll do things pretty much on their terms, I've found.
Well, independence is okay. I'm an independent person.
I respect
it. And I value that.
I'm not going to get into an argument with you about cats. I love them, and I think you're absolutely right.
Well, I have a real concern for all the feral cats and the feral kittens. Yeah, I hope things. There are a lot of cat people out there that may need some help.
Susan, thank you for the call. Why don't you tell a story about the cats as you've got several of them in the book?
Yeah, actually, one is very similar to a dog story we heard a moment ago about a cat in New York that went in to retrieve her kittens in a burnt building that was on fire. And I think that I can't remember now if there were five or six, but she literally went back one time after another and collected each one and brought it out by the scruff, just like the dogs we just heard about. And she survived. She was burned, and she takes a little special care. Actually, she passed away not too long ago, but she lived a full life and just had a wonderful owner who took really wonderful care of her after her incident.
You know, heroics is one thing, and courage is another. They don't necessarily have to go together, but one of the things that impresses me about many of the stories you tell is that courage is involved. Going back into a burning house is not something
that's right.
Many people or animals would do.
That's right. And you look at the situation and you know, this was a mama cat, and I'm sure that she has that parental instinct to save her babies. But there's still, it's a step beyond that, really, because she's clearly in danger and she must sense, you know, this is fire, this is bad in some way. Yeah, but she went back in.
I'm glad you mentioned that it was a mama cat, because I wanted to get into this whole notion of the maternal mm-hmm. aspect of it. A number of the stories really are evidence of that. And you have one about hippos, for instance, where
right.
clearly there is a mother at work here. Why don't you relate what I'm talking about?
Yeah, this is fantastic, because it's not so often that we catch things in the wild that are happening like this. It's often something in captivity or in a home. But in this case, a nature guide in Africa was taking a tour around, and they saw animals crossing the Mara River. And this is a pretty dramatic event. And twice, young calves of different species got kind of caught in the river, weren't going to make it across. There are crocodiles in the river. It's very dangerous. And this large female hippo went in two different times and helped a zebra calf and I think a wildebeest calf across the river. And it was very clear that she went in after them and pushed them to shore. And so she was not only putting herself at risk, but she was protecting animals of a completely different species. It had nothing to do with her. Now, the people watching said that she had young nearby on the shore. So again, we see maybe a maternal instinct was at work here.
You know, I've seen videos like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have, too, of the wildebeest migration, what have you.
Yes.
They've been helped by other animals under these kinds of conditions. Well, I have a little over a minute left. There's one I wanted to mention, struck me in particular, was the dolphins. We've all heard stories over the centuries of dolphins helping sailors who have
mm-hmm.
fallen off the boats. But very quickly, could you just tell us what that was all about?
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of them, but the one I think you're talking about is
the great
lifeguards.
White shark.
Yeah, so there was a group of young lifeguards and their teacher, and they were practicing a swim off the coast of New Zealand. And it turned out there was a great white shark coming toward them. Only the lead guy saw it, luckily. But this pod of dolphins came and surrounded the people and flooded their tails and splashed, which is what they would normally do when a predator was close. But they included the people in this protective measure. And again, it seemed very clear that they were doing this to protect the people.
Right. Yeah. Well, again, the dolphins come to the rescue. Flipper prevails,
that's
right?
That's right, exactly.
Jennifer Allen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Good luck during your school visits here in St. Louis, and good luck with the book. It's
a lot
of fun, and we'll look forward to the next one, whatever that might be.
Thank you so much.
That's Jennifer Holland. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.